Welcome to the Lorehounds.
Oh shit, John. Alien invasion. Run.
I am John, and I received this outline by fax, as you just heard.
And I'm David, and I'm happy to ride in the back of an ambulance with Dr. Abbott anywhere. He and I can, I don't know, write charts by candlelight together.
Fair enough. This is our coverage of episode 8 of season 2 of The Pit, 2 p.m. We are well into the afternoon now.
And we are well into the show. We started out as a kind of a shorter vibe check podcast, and now I just spent like 2 hours preparing this outline.
Should have loaded up Admiral Akbar. It's a trap.
And I think it took me about 2 hours to fax it to John too, because he had to go to the thrift store, buy a fax machine. Anyway, as always, links for feedback, for Discord conversations, and subscription stuff, they're all in the show notes of this episode. We have an email address, ptmc@thelorehounds.com. Also, John, we have a show guide. You want to tell the folks about the show guide?
David's made a lovely show guide where you can look at all the patients and the characters, look at the patient's conditions, what we're treating. You know, if the team here at PTMC had the show guide, they wouldn't have needed Joy's memory.
That's right. I will say that the show guide works great on mobile. It's a better mobile interaction than it is on a regular computer, because you can sort of scroll through, and if you have to remember a doctor's name, or if you want to look up a quick patient details, like, wait, who is that patient? What was their chief complaint? That kind of stuff. It's just a really great, handy, quick reference instead of just searching the internets at random. So, and we'll put a link for the for that resource in the show notes as well for this episode.
Very cool. Well, David, let's get right into it. What'd you think of the episode?
It was an interesting episode. I didn't really appreciate some of the subtlety that was going on in the episode until I started doing the outline and some of the breakdown stuff. And there are two questions that sort of arise in this episode. One, how we treat people in difficult circumstances. And then how far do we go when we're looking to relieve suffering, even though that relief may cause harm? So we have a lot of conversations in this one about dignity and care, you know, how, you know, a person's behavior relates to how that care is delivered. Obviously, we have Jackie Liddell, who, you know, has the tongue laceration, Howard Knox, who is the obese character, and Roxy Hamler, who's going through, you know, terminal cancer. But then we have some interesting things too with McKay and Langdon in terms of dignity in care, because they're both recovering and are, you know, professionals in their field. And so how do we treat those people with dignity when they're making good faith efforts to, you know, return?
Right. What is the balance between giving you some grace to, you know, improve yourself, but also making sure that you're not being given power when you're not wielding it responsibly?
Right, exactly. And then, and to earn that trust, to gain that power back, to have the space to earn that trust.
Right.
But then we also have the doctrine of double effect, and I've got some more notes about that later on. And that's, you know, in the eye medicine, that's a double effect scenario right there. And then obviously treating Howard, there's a lot of, you know, medical procedures that are threatening his life. Not only, you know, does Roxy, you know, Roxy managing her pain meds and that kind of stuff. So I thought that was really interesting. They're really thinking deeply and developing these scripts in a very, I'd really love to be in the writer's room to hear some of the conversations and how they decide for the, you know, oh, this episode is going to be about this, or how are we going to assign that, and, you know, break these things down. So it's really good stuff. There's also an interesting theme of resilience in there. Like, how do we pick up the pieces after, you know, technology that we've been relying on goes out? And we dealt with that during the pandemic in some ways. People are thinking about it now in terms of what's going on with certain types of enforcement in this country. You know, what does resilience look like? And I think we can talk about some of that as well, because, like, You got to have things to be able to be resilient, right? And the way that they rolled those whiteboards out, that was like really quick. They had them somewhere.
Yeah, we got to talk about that, like the cutouts. You know what I'm talking about? The stand up thing where they had the cutouts of like what part of your body? Right,
exactly.
God! You know that,
and they were just Abbott, there to explain to everybody. You know, it's a teaching hospital, right? They're teachers. I get it, but still, they're like flipping it out in a dramatic fashion.
Right, but Abbott was overjoyed to be explaining 100%. This. You know, like I'm watching it, well, like this guy's having the time of his life.
100%. Well, he did say this is going to be fun. So, but then for the show itself, this episode was hitting me in the feels like I was kind of expecting the whole season was going to when I did my season one rewatch before we started. Or I didn't do the season one rewatch. You know what? Now that I think about it, I have to recalibrate what I'm saying here a little bit. I watched a couple of key episodes, and all of those key episodes were hitting me in the feels. And so I have this impression that season one was hitting me in the feels almost every episode. But this episode, this season is doing that less on a consistent basis in my reconstructed memory, you know, my reconstructed perception of my experience with season one. But there were a couple moments with Howard and with Dana and Ilana in the rape collection stuff that was just, or even there was a quick moment with Roxy where I was just really got, like they really got. And I was like, oh, this is what I'm expecting this show to do. But it's interesting because the construction of the season, the ebb and flow, the pacing of what they're presenting to us and what might seem to be mundane is actually more nuanced. So it'll be really interesting to do a full season rewatch after it's all over to, you know, feel how it flows overall.
I think it's also a show that a lot of people binged after season one, myself included.
Word, yeah.
And so this is a different experience for us going into season two.
Right.
As a community, I think.
Right. And now, man, the Reddit boards are just lit up after an episode drops.
I know. This might be the biggest show on this year so far. I know An End of the Seven Kingdoms was big, but I think this is a bigger viewership probably.
I think so. And it's more accessible, where Night of the Seven Kingdoms is going to be selected. Yeah. People are going to be, oh, that was that Game of Thrones stuff. And they're not going to be interested in investing.
People forget that Game of Thrones was the exception to the rule, which is that most people do not, big fantasy shows are not the main attraction for most people watching TV. The Game of Thrones broke through that barrier, and a lot more people were watching it than normally watch fantasy shows. But that doesn't mean that they kept watching fantasy shows necessarily.
Right. They didn't stick around into the fantasy genre. That's a good point. So the other thing that I was noticing, we were chatting on the Discord a little bit about this. Every character in this, even if they're just a minor medical condition, they treat everyone in a three-dimensional fashion. And with some of our other characters we get to be with for longer, we get to explore those facets more, but they don't ever create, as you're saying, sort of standouts or cutouts that are two-dimensional. Oh, that's the bad guy. That's the good guy.
Except maybe Ogilvy. There is no redeeming quality here.
I have some so notes far. About Ogilvy. That's what I'm saying, is be prepared for Ogilvy to have the camera, the POV, swing around and, oh, he's three-dimensional. Oh, he's interesting.
But if they're going to do that, they went way too heavy-handed this episode.
And I think they intentionally did so.
But this was heavy-handed. This was like, oh my God, guy be a bigger asshole?
If you go back and you watch what he was saying and you pay attention to what's going on, he's just got poor social skills. He is not actually being rude to Howard. He's being rude because he's being obtuse or not paying attention.
I can excuse the zoo comment like that, but saying, oh, I wonder why, when they couldn't get an IV, like that's just rude. That's just straight up being mean.
But then that's how, have you done it? Okay, so I did a second watch and I was paying very close attention to Ogilvy because I know that this is issue, because there's a lot of hate on the internet right now for Ogilvy. So I was very keenly attuned to what he was saying and what he was doing at different, we're kind of talking about Ogilvy now, so like, whatever, we'll lean into that. He says the zoo line, But then he's like, what? He was just thinking about like how to proceed to do this, right?
Yeah, I get that one. Like right. that one I think you can excuse that way. I just don't think the other ones you can.
He's concerned, his concern for the patient shows up in rude ways. I'm not disputing that. So he's saying, oh, Wegovy, Ozempic, you know, water aerobics. And they're like, yo, he is, you know, let's treat the patient, not, you know, for the acute care, not for the general lifestyle and stuff. But he's thinking about the holistic aspect of the patient. When he says, wonder why, yeah, that's a little bit of a rude comment. And he gets checked for that, and that's good. And I think when you look at his behavior and you look at who he is, and I'm approaching him as a three-dimensional person, he's studied the shit out of medicine. He knows all these obscure references to all these obscure conditions. He's memorized the survival rates of all of these things. He didn't get to this job without working his ass off to get here.
Sure.
He cares about his profession. This is his first day. He wants to do a good job. He's excited. And he's a person who doesn't have a kind of social awareness or diplomacy or good graces, right? He's a little bit obtuse. So, and I think it comes off easy to see him as being like a jerk. We thought Joy was a jerk, but then we learned a little bit
more about
her. I honestly
didn't think Joy was a jerk. If you go back in the podcast, I was the Joy defender from okay, the beginning. Fine. And I'll tell you why it's Ogilvy related, is that Ogilvy spent the first half of the season talking over her and kind of belittling mm-hmm. her a little bit.
Right.
And he is the rude, loud white man in the room, mm-hmm. trying to be the loudest person in the room. Well, the woman of color who's extremely competent seems like might be more competent than him based on her diagnosis
sure.
of sunburn.
Fair.
Then you could be as book smart as you want, but if you don't have the humility to learn on the job, then you're not going to be a good doctor.
I'm not disagreeing with any of that. And I'm not disagreeing with, you know, how they've portrayed it. I'm just saying, watch. Let's watch and see what the writers do with this character to see if they give us some other insights into who he is.
I don't doubt that they will at least try to do that. I'm just saying he was so over the top an asshole this episode that I am going to struggle with that pivot.
Okay. I would say go back and pay attention to what he's saying. I'm not saying like we should elevate him above any of the other doctors or anything like that. I'm just saying there is, and I think that they're doing it. I think they're doing this very intentionally. And I don't know what
I don't doubt that.
Everything is intentional. It's a written show, right?
I don't doubt that it's an intentional, like, look how much of an asshole this guy is. And later, you know, he's a lovable asshole. But like, maybe they're not, right? Like, maybe it's going to be, okay, this guy kind of just gets forced out at the end of the day, right? We've never seen someone get fired yet. Maybe we'll see somebody get fired.
That's what I'm going to. And then the whole point of this episode is about dignity. Right. Mm-hmm. He is being ignorant of people's dignity. He doesn't mm-hmm. know how to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that he does. What I'm saying is that he doesn't. He's so hyper-focused on his profession, on his first day, on making a good appearance. He's probably a kid who's always excelled and topped everyone else, you know, in these sort of things because young people vibes, whatever. So I am just waiting for them to see how they unfold his character. I think that's my argument.
We'll see. Got to wait till the end of the season. But so far right now, I am just like, can we just get rid of Ogilvy? Can he just be fired already?
I cannot stand this guy.
I am a big old Ogilvy hater. That being said, like, the actor is doing a great job making me hate him. Like, I think this actor is very talented. I just want to be clear. Like, these people, there's a lot of people who like don't like the character and then they're like mean to the actor. I'm like, I don't understand that. The actor right. was good. That's why you hated the character.
Right. This is a written role. Right.
Right.
It's a written role.
Right. He's doing a great job, though. He's doing a great job milking that.
Last thing I wanted to throw out really quick is I've been avoiding the next, you know, the teaser for the next episode at the end of the episode after the credits, because I don't want to be spoiled. I just want to mm-hmm. go in fresh. But I did skip ahead and I was able to watch the behind the scenes. So there's a behind the scenes segment, I guess, at the end of most episodes. I haven't been watching that. I didn't even know they were there until I kind of skipped. And I have to say, whoa, like, wow, this one talked about the set and some of their production stuff. They built this EO. This is a purpose built ER. And all of the assistant directors, the camera operators, the you know, all the production people, they're all wearing scrubs. So you will see crew members, cast people who are not cast members,
right,
in the background. Turns out that they're actually a production person, but you can't tell because they're the camera operators who are following everybody around. They're wearing the same outfits that like the nurses and other medical hospital staff are wearing.
Oh, wait, and, just in case they're in there, they could maybe angle it a little bit to avoid the camera. Yeah.
And they have all this stuff and they have everything mapped out. They have these like incredible spreadsheets for how to do their dialogue and the camera shots. It is an incredible production that these guys are putting together. So I would definitely say go check out the behind the scenes little featurette. It's like 2 or 3 minutes long for episode 8 because it's a real eye opener. So, all right, that's what I got. What do you got for hot takes?
I mean, I was already kind of sharing them with you in the middle of yours.
Yes.
but I think it was a great episode. It made me emotional, too. You were talking about it making you emotional. I was perhaps a little sensitive on a couple issues this episode just because of my family's history.
Yes.
But
I was thinking of you during that.
Well, not even that. Like, I mean, we can wait for a couple scenes later. But there's stuff that, like, I have watched happen that make me
right,
especially with Howard Knox. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that scene,
right?
But we'll get there in a minute. I do really like this that Langdon is starting to fit in a little bit more. He's starting to reassert his confidence a little bit. I am excited for the Santos turnaround. I think she's going to really turn around now that she's not attached to charting.
Okay.
That is.
Didn't we hate? Wasn't there a lot of Santos hate for in season one? I'm just saying, you know,
there Santos hates a lot because she is a bully, and I think that's undeniable. She's a bully.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is she a bully with a lot of trauma? It seems like, yeah, I think a lot of bullies have a lot of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't excuse being a bully.
No, no. You got to be responsible for your behavior.
Exactly. And, right. Exactly.
I'm not disabusing Ogilvy of not being responsible for his behavior and his words, right? I'm not. I just to make sure people don't at me on that I'm excusing Ogilvy.
The difference I see between Ogilvy and Santos is that Santos has shown us that she has a lot of empathy, especially for certain types of cases, and is able to have a good bedside manner when she's not scared of losing her job. So she has a lot of redeeming qualities. I have seen nothing redeeming in Ogilvy. That's okay. Why I make a difference. And am I saying that will never happen? No. I know this show could turn around
right
with it. But I also, like, I don't even think in Santos's worst moment she'd been quite as mean, especially to patients.
She was terrible to Javadi during season one. She was horrible.
Yeah, but Javadi's not a patient, so she doesn't count.
Oh, just in colleagues. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, just colleagues, that's one thing. But patients, that's a whole other. I mean, I will say, like, it's almost like, you know, you can tell a lot about somebody about how they treat wait staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
How they treat service staff.
Yeah, that's a really
good point. You can also tell a lot about somebody on how they treat people on their worst moments, like people who have to go to the ER.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Ogilvy is somebody who kicks down, I think, who punches down. And I don't like that.
Mm.
At least Santos is swinging to her sides.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie is rightfully pissed, I think, about how this cybersecurity thing was handled.
Mm-hmm.
Al-Hashimi, I'm very surprised that she is taking a risk here because she has been very risk-averse generally this episode, and I'm excited to see where that goes.
Mm-hmm.
I like the themes that you pulled out. I'm going to let you introduce them.
Okay.
I mean, you already kind of alluded to them. But this quality of care thing, this dignity and care thing,
yeah,
I really think you're right, is going very strongly through this episode and in a lot of different ways too, manifesting. This show does a really good job of like taking one issue and examining it through different cases. in a really smart way. That is only possible in a show like this, not in the mystery of the week medical type shows that are the standard.
And that's where I was really surprised when I started breaking the episode apart. I was like, oh, there's a structure within the structure here.
Yeah.
That is really that they're turning the show around, breaking this story and writing these scripts and shooting it in this pacing it's an incredible achievement in what they're doing.
Are we in a golden era of medical shows with this and Scrubs coming back?
Were you a Scrubs guy in the day?
I wasn't. I'm not opposed to it. I just never really got into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just funny that like that's coming back and this is huge now. Like we're in another golden age of medical shows that has not been seen since the early 2000s.
We have the seriousness on the pit of the pit on one end of the spectrum, and then we have Scrubs on the other end. So it's an interesting phenomena, no doubt.
People seem to be liking the new Scrubs episodes too.
Okay,
they were well received. It seems like
that's good to hear. I think it's a well-loved show. I think it's a beloved show, right? Like a community.
Were you a scrubber?
No, I was never into it, really.
Okay.
I never had anything against it. I think I can't even remember if I watched it. I thought it was funny. Yeah. You know, so it's within that sort of community or vibe, right? Or
yeah, it's Creek, like a, or, it's like kind of a mockumentary.
Yeah.
The Office kind of Parks and Rec.
Was the UK Office the television show for that kind of mockumentary thing? Were they the ones to break open that format?
I believe they were.
Okay.
I believe they were.
They spawned a whole... Anyway,
I know.
That is, you know, it's... I mean, everything to What We Do in the Shadows, to Our Flag Means Death, to...
Right.
Lower Decks, you know, all kinds of stuff. Pretty wild.
And now there's even a... what is it? I watched some of the first season of it. There's another show on Peacock right now that's basically like... a mockumentary of medical.
Okay. Don't know about
what
it.
What am I trying to find?
I don't know.
Let's get right into the episode. I'm going to find out what the show is called.
Okay. Well, do you want to do a break and then we can get into the episode and we'll flow then.
All right. We'll see you right after the break.
Reggie, I just sold my car online.
Let's go, Grandpa. Wait, you did?
Yep. On Carvana. Just put in the license plate, answered a few questions, got an offer in minutes. Easier than setting up that new digital picture frame.
You don't say.
Yeah, they're even picking it up tomorrow. Talk about fast.
Wow, way to go. So, about that picture frame.
Forget about it. Until Carvana makes one, I'm not interested.
Car selling made easy. On Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
It's St. Denis Medical. Okay. I found out during the break.
Very good.
It's okay. It's pretty good. It's not the best show I've ever seen, but it was fun.
Not familiar with it. Okay, cool. Should we talk about some of the characters first to start, or did you want to talk about one of the themes?
I think let's get into the characters and talk about the themes as we go.
Okay. It's such a hard show to
navigate through.
Everything's so interconnected. So we'll sort of traverse as best we can. Robbie and Ahashimi. We have this whole sort of folksy medicine with the dry erase boards versus the AI. We got a little, you know, is your AI app still going to be available?
Can I ask you too?
Yeah.
How? I couldn't tell if that was SAS from Santos, but I think it was.
You can't not. Yeah. You're like every computer says not available and you're asking about the AI.
Come and Al-Hashibi does give her a look like, why would you even ask me that? but at the same time, can I ask you a question? How did Al-Hashimi print out the stats for that patient?
Oh, that's a really good question. Did they have because that's a kind of an experimental treatment. It's not a, that's a really good point. Good continuity.
Did she already print that out? And that's, I don't think so. Didn't it go down before that patient got in?
Yeah, that's an emergent case. So that's a good point.
maybe a little production error there.
All right. We'll good see. Continuity call. I like it.
Maybe they meant to have that earlier and they forgot.
Just roll with it. But it's a good point though. I like it.
Yeah. I don't think they, you know, if this is like a rare treatment, I don't think they had pamphlets printed out already.
I was going to say, she just didn't go to the library wire rack, you know, spinning wire rack and pull it off the shelf of pamphlets.
You ever watch 30 Rock and there's that episode where Liz's dentist says, I printed this out for you. It cost me a lot of money, but it's important for you. And it just says hard cheeses in your root canal.
I missed that episode.
But yeah, I think this is a custom made thing.
Yeah.
This was a really interesting moment for me because this is the first time I think we've seen Al Hashimi take that risk. You know, she does do the informed consent thing. Mm-hmm. She does, which, you know, that's informed consent is even stronger than regular consent, right? You have to explain all the risks. You have to explain all the material risks here.
And at each stage.
Yeah.
You have to have the person acknowledge like, okay, here's this bit. Got that. Okay, good. Here's the next bit that relates. Yeah. You have to go through step by step. You can't just go blanket and then go, no go. It has to be detailed.
Was this as surprising to you?
I didn't think about the risk so much.
I mean, Robbie comes in and says, well, I won't be here for the aftermath. Do what you want.
Well, that's a whole other thing that I'm really annoyed at because he kind of wants it both ways.
Yeah.
He's like, F you, everybody. I'm out. Ha ha. See you, suckers. But not until I leave. You got to respect me. You got to respect my authority. Right. And it's like, are you in or you out, guy? And I think that's part of what happened with the hospital administration. They were like, bro, you're out. You've got a few more hours left on your shift. Al Hashimi's going to be here to carry over the pieces.
He's half pregnant right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, come on, Robbie, you can't do it both ways.
Yeah.
You can't do it both ways.
I think that's right. Especially if like Al Hashimi is going to oversee the input of all these physical charts into the computer.
Oh shit. She should be the one who
is briefed on everything, right? Yeah, he's going to nope out. Because he started at 7, right? So his shift is probably supposed to stop in like a couple hours.
Yeah. At the end of the season.
Well,
conceivably.
Well, what I'm saying, well, no, not at the end of the season. It's always the extended. That's how we get to 15 episodes. It's always something happens wrong
over,
to keep them there for 15 hours.
Right. So I think that's an interesting point too, because how are they going to, they've got to get all these charts back into the system for patient care and continuity of care. Maybe that's where Al Hashimi's AI system is going to assist.
I don't think that's going to do very well. By the way, did you see, there was this great meme on Reddit where they said, when the nurse gives, I forgot which nurse gave it to her, but one of the nurses gave Santos a 5-hour energy and they said, oh, it's only another 6 hours here. And
then they, Princess or Perla. Yeah. I can't
remember. Okay. Yeah. It was one of them. But they said me watching the nurse say 5 hours left, knowing that there's 8 episodes left in the season. And it's Walter White shouting out of the car door, out of the car window.
Funny. Nice. Another interesting thing that was going on with Al Hashimi is that her and Santos are back on a little bit of good footing,
mm-hmm.
right? She's getting sort of the mentorship. So Al Hashimi kind of stomped on her a little bit, like, would be a shame to repeat your second year. But now Santos is like, hey, I'm working on my chart. I'm doing this stuff. I almost gave this misdiagnosis, but I got it. You know, I held back and I got it corrected. And she's really starting to get in line with how Al Hashimi mentors, right? And does her work in terms of teaching the hospital, which is going to be, is obviously different from Robbie. So there's an interesting point there is how do you work with different coworkers, especially different supervisors in the same unit or in the same part of the institution?
I have a question though.
Mm.
Is it out of character for Santos to confess to almost making a frivolous order to this person who's like threatening to hold her back?
That's a good point because she's admitting to a mistake and she doesn't like to do that often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of out of character. Huh. There were a couple like weird moments that I thought meant to like strengthen the bond between Al Hashimi and people that didn't seem to flow with the writing. It was that one. And then when Mohan comes in and goes, mm-hmm. oh, you know, I'm actually thinking about applying for this fellowship. Like, lady, you just met this woman. Like, you guys just met. Like, why would you be talking to her about it? It felt like a conversation that, it was a non sequitur. It was a conversation that she would be having with somebody she'd be working under for like a month at least.
Who did Ohashimi work with at the VA? Because a couple of them had interactions with her before.
I know it was Mel King.
Mel King?
Yeah. But I don't remember if it was anybody else.
Okay.
Maybe she did.
I don't know. I can't remember if I was just wondering if that's the case. Because you're right. It is a very familiar conversation. And it is something that it'd be a kind of conversation that you would have with your mentor. Like, hey, I've been working with you for a couple of weeks. Or longer, and you're invested in my career, and I'm invested in you helping me, you know, guide my career. Yeah, or maybe it was just an opening play by Mohan to get Ohashimi interested in her career. So
yeah, maybe she did. Maybe I just forgot about this.
Right, I don't remember. Like maybe somebody could write in or something. I don't know.
I'm Googling it right now furiously.
Okay, good luck. That's a tough search.
Okay, she actually supposedly, according to Google, she did work with Dr. Ohashimi. So I guess have a bad memory on this.
That's fine.
This was not out of character. Detail. And I'm not going to edit this out because the people deserve to know about my ignorance.
They
deserve to know.
Do you have an arc? Do you have a redemption arc, John?
I might have a redemption arc.
Can we make space to forgive
please don't,
you?
Please don't compare me to Ogilvy. All right, let's move on.
Well, real quick about Mohan. Do you think geriatric care is an appropriate
I think that'd be perfect area for her. I don't think that the ER is the place for someone who likes to spend time with their patients and you know, really like get to know them and have empathy for them. And it's just like this Pitt ER is like the least realistic ER mm-hmm. in terms of how much time they spend with the patients, how much care they put into it. The ER does amazing work. All these ER people in real life do amazing work and they save so many lives and they work hard. But I'm just saying like they are so overworked and there's so little time. I don't think you really get to see these people that long. I've been in many ERs with my parents and whatnot, and like the doctor's barely there, and it's not their fault. Like I'm not blaming the doctor.
They're
blaming
charting
the system.
They're busy charting by candlelight.
They're busy charting. Yep, they can't be held back in R2.
I think if I remember right, Mohan last season during season one, Robbie. That was one of the themes. Was Robbie was sort of counseling her like. You know, because hospital administration was on top of Robbie about clearing cases and moving it along, and so
but also about patient satisfaction. So
exactly, and which is a no-win scenario, right?
It's right.
A total Kobayashi Maru situation. And Mohan, I think, if I remember right, she was wanting to spend that time with her client or with her patients and go the extra mile for them. And yeah, maybe in a different clinical setting, she would be. Better pace, but you know this ER experience is going to do her wonders for her career, no matter where she goes.
Yeah, it does seem like kind of the crucible, right? This situation mm-hmm. where you have to figure out what you're good at and what you're not good at very quickly.
Right. No shipping this episode for Mohan and Abbott.
Abbott no is, shipping,
is
indeed.
Off. And that was one of the things I was saying about the pacing. Another show would have started to develop that relationship a little bit more. We would have leaned into it. We would have taken the next step. But this show will just will open up a little storyline and then completely back out of it for two or three episodes. I mean, there were a couple of two, three episodes we haven't even heard or seen from Baby J. Dow. But we got to have some resolution this time. Nobody took me up on my Dana, sending in their Dana voice.
Well, maybe they will next week.
Okay.
You didn't offer a prize, so.
Oh, that's a good point. What should the prize be? I don't know.
David's undying admiration.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to work for a lot of people. So, what else do you want to talk about?
There's so much in this episode. You brought up dignity of care. The Howard Knox thing, I'll just, you know, speak from personal experience. My dad was a big guy, very big guy my whole life. And, you know, that affected his health and was part of his fairly early death.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this kind of like just the minute that you're overweight, especially, you know, very overweight.
Mm.
Doctors will start to ignore other possible explanations and they will do a very bad job diagnosing you and figuring out what's wrong. I really love that all these other doctors are doing a great job actually looking for the problem and not, you know, just being like, well, he's just fat. But Ogilvy, a little triggering from that. Maybe that's why I hate him so much.
Yeah. It's a good point. Because his comments are insensitive and rude, even though they may be rooted in a place of concern or interest.
I literally at one point was talking to the ER doctors I think it was a nurse who was calling me, and they were trying to get me to like admit that my father was an alcoholic because he had liver damage. Mm-hmm. And he like very obviously was not an alcoholic.
Why
like,
were they asking you to that's
because they wanted to dismiss the issue. That's what they wanted to do.
Oh, I see. That's
and it was because he had non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is, you know, it's partially genetic, it's partially weight related, and it did a lot of damage to his liver over a couple decades. But yeah, they like I'm telling you, like these people, it's a big problem in medicine is fat phobia and really dismissing people who have who struggle with their weight. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to flag that, and that's why I was really sensitive to Ogilvy's stuff,
because I've seen
it in action, and it's real. No. It's not just a fantasy here.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it in that regard, because I'm just thinking of all medical care professionals as people with little angel wings, right? When they're just as pressurized and busy and have their own biases and internal
And the system.
Yes.
We were talking about this on Discord the other day, completely unrelated, but the system is really trained to just be like, fat, bad, and any excess weight is your demise, and that is the cause of your problem. That's not a symptom, and that's not a...
It's a willful thing. You did this willfully.
Right.
There's knowing against all...
There is a moral judgment that
yes.
happens to fat people, and I'm using the preferred term of, you know, fat activists.
Right.
There is, and I've recommended this podcast before. I think Maintenance Phase is a great podcast. But there's a lot of great episodes of that podcast where they talk about how there is a moral judgment on people.
Yes.
Who are fat. And I, again, using that term, that is the preferred term of activists in that community. When like there is not a moral judgment for pretty much any other health condition.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, there are other health conditions with, you know, STDs have moral judgment.
Right.
Drug addiction has moral judgment, but I think people understand that those have had moral judgments, and there's been work to undo that. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's been much work to undo the fat phobia in the medical community. And it's trained into them in medical school too. It's not even just like societal.
Right. I liked how Garcia, when they pulled off to the side to have that conversation about, you know, having an operation to figure out what's going on, that in fact, all of them, they're like, okay, well, the RCT scanner has this much capacity. The rate of mortality for a patient with this condition is unacceptable in this regard, which brings into the doctrine of double effect, interestingly, in a moment. But Garcia was just like, I don't want to operate on this guy because that may actually put his life in danger relative to, you know, his condition. And she's not like, bro's fat, I can't, or, you know, can't operate on him.
Yeah, that's very a reasonable conversation to have.
Exactly. Right. And I appreciated that in that conversation. And I think maybe that's what they're using Ogilvy in a little bit of a foil position here, in that his insensitivity and his asking of inappropriate questions that have nothing to do with his acute care in that moment. I agree. Those are totally inappropriate questions. They have nothing to do with like how we're going to take care of you, Howard. But it's kind of a foil to show how the other ones are being level-headed and treating him as a person with dignity.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's just like, you see the way he talks to him, like, well, why aren't you doing water aerobics? Like, who has access to water aerobics? Can I just say that? Like, you know, you listen to him, and we don't talk enough about also the intersectionality here. Mm. He says he was in a car accident.
Yes.
He lost his job. So clearly he's probably on some kind of government benefits program.
Yep.
He has probably SSI. No extra cash.
Right.
He's barely hanging on. And he, you know, what's he going to, how's he going to get anywhere?
And he's depressed.
He doesn't have any family. He has depression.
Right. Yeah.
And And you talk about the intersectionality of all that, like, and also who's going to pay for the Wegovy? He doesn't have any money.
Yeah. Super expensive.
So he's just saying, why haven't you solved this problem? That's what Ogilvy is saying.
And I get that's an inappropriate
right, exactly. You know,
thing to voice that in that moment. I think this dignity and care of care kind of thing too, there's a line that Dana says that I think I pulled this out. I can't remember where. I think it's when she's talking to Alana at some point, something about, I'm paraphrasing here, we honor what you choose to endure. The system must rise to that. Sorry, getting a little emotional there. That our systems, that we build these systems that are built to serve the system itself and not the human beings that, like, look at modern airline travel. It sucks, right?
Yeah.
It's designed to move numbers. It's not designed to move human beings.
Right.
You know, who have dignity and autonomy. Well, you know, human beings, we're messy, no doubt about it, and all of that kind of stuff. But it's about cash in hand, you know, bums on seats and getting from A to B. That's how we make our money.
And now bums and faces. Have you seen the new seat designs?
Exactly. The high-low seat.
Better not fart.
I fart a lot on airplanes.
There's going to be a lot of pink eye in this country very soon.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's this idea. And I'll contrast it a little bit, too. You know, I have a child in the fifth grade. And, you know, we go to our parent-teacher conferences and we get the report cards and all that kind of stuff. And it's, at least in our school system and in our district, we have shifted the mechanistic aspects of elementary education. We're not in middle school yet and we're not in high school yet, so I don't know what's up there yet. But my child doesn't come home with a pass-fail gradation system, right? She comes home with a sort of a curvy-like thing, which is like based on age and capability and what we've studied for a long-ass time in education now, the majority of the kids are going to be in this little range right here. Your kid is either above or below that range. So if they're above or below, they're not failing as a moral failing.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't choose to fail. They are having whatever issues they're having. So we're going to provide that extra level of support. And if you're achieving ahead, great, we're going to give you more. And if you're behind where we think you should be, we're going to make sure that you have the support to learn what you need to be learning at this point. So we're not failing you. Oh, you got a D. You're off to auto shop, right? You know, go down to the shop class or whatever. We're not treating it's not mechanistic anymore. It's attending to the human being. And I think that's a great way that we can see some of those shifts of trying to bring humanity back into our institutional systems.
I think that's great. I don't know if I've seen that.
Yeah, well, I don't know where you are.
In this school district, but, you know, I'm hoping when we move next year where we'll find a good school district with something.
Yeah, and I don't know how this is applied across the way, and then I know we all have different experiences. I'm just appreciating that my child doesn't have to have the fear of getting a C, D, or F, right? You know, they're like, hey, you're having trouble in math. We see you're having trouble in math, so let's get you in a small group where you can work and drill. And everybody's getting small group and breakout instruction. It's not like, oh, these are the dumb kids.
Well, we're in kindergarten right now, so there's not a lot of grading going on.
Right.
We'll see how it goes.
A couple of quick things more on dignity and care stuff. And just thinking, I was thinking through it a little bit about like what constitutes good patient care. Respecting for somebody's autonomy and agency. And you do that by... like asking, can you breathe if we lay you down? Right? State the truth. Hey, this is going to be uncomfortable, or this might be scary, or you could have this is going to be weird for you. Tell us how it goes. Are you okay? Ogilvy says, how you doing? He gives him a thumbs up. You preserve patient privacy and dignity, right? So they talk about room numbers and they use abbreviated diagnosis codes, right? So that, you know, people Mm-hmm. Whoever's in two is you know, having this.
Yeah, no one can figure out what PSI means.
Exactly. Right. That's, yeah. Well, you know, you
reduce, I don't know how much privacy right. is really with that board.
Well, you're reducing it. You're reducing, you're making it harder for, you know, you're using technical jargon, which is interesting, to help, you know, veil slightly, you know, a patient's condition. But then knowing when and when not to use terminology and jargon, when Brooke says in English, please, when she's saying, hey, like, what are you guys talking about? You know, eye stroke, right? So there's a great little encapsulation of jargon and terminology in that thing where they're talking in front of somebody who's paying very close attention and is not going to be afraid to ask questions when they don't know what's going on. So yeah, so in dignity and care is like, how do you provide critical care in a fast-paced, high-pressurized environment while treating the person as a human being with autonomy and agency?
And how do you do that when someone is dying?
Right.
Like with Roxy.
Right, right.
You want to bring that in?
Yeah. We can talk about Roxy. Where are your thoughts with Roxy?
I mean, her parents might... Maybe it would have been better for them to stay for a minute and have the husband take the kids out for, I don't know why they didn't do that. Maybe just to give them another moment alone to talk. I don't know who called the parents. Maybe the husband is the one who called them so that, they could try to talk sense into her. Why don't you go home? You know,
right.
This and that. Mm-hmm. You know, now, and maybe they said, like, maybe these two just need to talk alone away from the kids for a minute. I remember last episode, there were a lot of conversations happening in front of those kids where I'm like, I don't know if these kids are old enough to hear that yet.
And the one kid, I think it was, is it Shane? It was like, no, I don't want to leave. Cause he's like, what if something happens while I'm getting ice cream? I'll never love ice cream again.
Yeah. I get it. You know, as an adult, I get it. You know what I mean? Like I remember I was reading a novel when my father passed away and I could never pick it up again because it's just, you know, ruined for me.
Wow.
And so I, when I knew my mother was imminently passing away, I stopped reading one of my favorite series so that it wouldn't be ruined for me.
Right. So it wouldn't be affected by it.
I had recently finished one of the books and I said, I'm not starting the next one until everything is all done.
Right.
And it was a wise choice. It was a wise choice.
Quick shout out to John Getz. Is it John Getz? Yeah, John Getz. Not Howard. I don't know why I have Howard in there. I think it's just John Getz, who's a well-known character actor, has a massive television filmography, I guess you call it. I don't know, whatever. And been on a number of shows. And so a lot of people recognized him when he showed up there as dad. So just quick shout out to Mr. Getz. What did you make of the look in the nod that Roxy shared with the dad? Yeah.
Sorry, with her dad or the dad?
With her dad. So
with her dad.
With her dad, as everybody else leaves the room, he's the last one to leave the room. And they share a look.
I think it was just like, thank you for, you know, clearing out for a minute.
Okay. I was reading deep. I was reading more into it.
What were you reading into it?
I'm reading into it like the... kind of a death with dignity thing. Like maybe she's had conversations with him about this.
Like, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I need to figure it out. It's,
I'm getting like super emotional, man. Sorry. Sorry, everybody. Maybe we should pivot off this topic.
I think that we're going to learn more about it coming up.
100%.
But right now, I think Robbie's hinting where it's going, which is she should get as much pain meds as she needs, and we're not worried about if it kills her.
Let's talk about the doctrine of double effect, as well as the question of palliative and hospice care, which is stuff that I know you kind of know about from.
Yeah, I mean, experience. When my mother started hospice, they gave us a box, and they said, this is your emergency box, and it had morphine and it had antipsychotics and it had a bunch of other stuff, and they said, you know, don't use this until a nurse directs you, but here you go.
And did they do that by telephone?
No, they came in.
But the box was just there so that the nurse could have it.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. They would authorize it by telephone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They brought the box originally, and then they sat us down. They told us what's in it.
Got it.
They told us, you know, don't use anything until we give the go ahead, but you can go. There was like a 24/7 number.
Okay.
That you could call.
Right.
And they
would walk you through whatever.
They would walk through. If they had to up a dose, then they would come, but they would come within like a couple hours. They mm-hmm. were really genuinely good about it, which is good.
Right.
That's kind of the thing in hospice, though, is that they don't worry that much about dose. Like, they don't want to like cause you to overdose right now, but like mm-hmm. they're not worried about like causing addiction. They're not worried about, you know, again, like falling unconscious,
right?
Things like that. If the pain gets too great, I don't want to go into too much specifics, but my mother needed a lot of pain meds because
right.
of where the cancer was in her body. It went to her bones, and
right.
that's something that Roxy said happened, right? Didn't they say it went to her bones?
I think so, yeah.
When it gets to the bones, if it gets to the inside of the bones, like the bone marrow area, like you will be screaming in pain. You won't be able to be awake.
Right. Right.
And yeah, I don't want to go too deep into it.
Yeah, but. No, that's fine. That's enough. Just to define really quick too, hospice care is a subtype of palliative care, and it's specialized care for people who have terminal illnesses, and it's focused on pain management, comfort, and quality of life rather than treating to cure. It's an acknowledgement that there's nothing more
mm-hmm.
medically that we can do to reverse your condition, and so we're treating you to have comfort and dignity on this terminal.
Palliative care, you are still able to get treatment to reverse the disease.
Right.
It is palliative, you know, that's just managing pain, managing symptoms.
Right.
Hospice care is, again, you're not, like you said, you're not allowed to treat anymore. It's not considered hospice.
Right.
You're just treating symptoms. And it's generally authorized when a doctor will sign off that you have estimated fewer than 6 months to live. Now, obviously people live all different times. You could be in hospice for years if a doctor just thinks that you're sicker than you are, but, you know, it's generally, we're not worried about treating you again.
Right. And so palliative care, like, as you said, is for treating, the root word is pallium from Latin, and it means to cloak or to mantle, and it's to provide relief from symptoms.
Yeah.
And so hospice is a subform of palliative, but the double doctrine effect is not a part of palliative care. It's something that palliative care will use. It's a general ethical principle that is beyond just medical ethics. And it's where the effect is used to justify aggressive symptom control when death hastening is foreseen, but an unintended side effect. So the you can cause a bad effect while pursuing a good effect, as long as the bad effect is foreseen, but not intended.
Yeah. That is such a fine line. That's insane. Right? Like, I would not want to be in charge of that.
Right. And you can see uses of double doctrine effect and other things like there's a way to use it in warfare, but there's too much going on in the world right now that I don't, in real aspect, I don't want to talk about that. But I'm just going to leave it there. There's more uses beyond medical for the double doctrine effect. So, but it's a philosophical and ethical rule that you can reach out from other practices of care to pull in to look at. And I think, yeah, when Robbie said, like, if that's where this is going, we have to treat her pain so that she's here now, even though that we know that caused her death. But we're not trying to cause that. We're trying to treat the, because sometimes you have a no-win situation, right? I guess, like, you got Civil War amputations, right? They're like, we're going to cause you pain to cut off your leg to save your life, right?
Yeah.
That's, you know.
Wait, can I say too, though, that like they haven't really shown Roxy being in pain other than when she's moving, like trying to get to the bathroom.
Right.
Like, I don't know if they've really sold me on you need this right now. Like,
I wonder, that feels
a little sticky to me.
There's a lot going on with her care that I'm like, ooh, this is like, there's a lot that they haven't told us yet. So
I'm uncomfortable with this whole, not just for personal circumstances reasons, right, but I'm just like, it's making me feel real squeamish about Robbie's calculations here.
I think it's I think they're doing it on purpose. So should we take a quick break and then we'll come back? We can talk a little bit more about the episode.
Yeah, let's do that. We're back. What else we got going on? We have the Chekhov's Duke that we need to talk about.
Right? I think they're setting up Duke for a bad fall on his motorcycle here, man.
You know, I was thinking of you the other day because you love talking about Chekhov's guns, and I was reading an interview.
It's a joke now, though. Like, it's almost like everything's a Chekhov's insert thing here.
But I was reading an interview with Matt Dinneman, who writes the Dungeon Crawler Carl series.
Oh, right, you were talking about that the other day.
It's an absurd, wonderful book series, and he talks about how he writes it basically like doodling. Like, he just improvises the whole thing. Everything is just yes and. He has no idea where he's going. But he says one of the few things he does is he keeps a running list of all his Chekhov's guns.
Okay. I love it. That's awesome.
He's like, if I set something up, I write it down, and then I just figure out when to pay it off later.
Right, right.
It's kind of fun.
Perfect. Yeah, no, I think Duke's in a, he might be in for some, might be a double, effect doctrine for Duke here. So, Harlow, we got Harlow sorted out. Like, all it needed was a shot and some tummy meds.
Isn't that interesting though, that like she needed a shot in her shoulder or like the base of her neck to heal a headache? Like, that's so interesting.
So tense, right? Remember, get some physical movement, everybody, and don't look down at your laptop all day.
And get a monitor holder, right?
Yeah, exactly. I see my daughter when she has a set amount of screen time every day and plays certain games. And I'm like, always like, sit up, hold your laptop up. Like, I see the hunch going and I'm like, man, don't.
You know what I bought for my work is I bought a laptop holder, a laptop stand that holds it up a little bit so that I don't have to worry as much about my neck. And it's worth the $20, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I think this is a really important point. Her case resolution happened like that. Once the communication layer got in place, Santa's just boop, boop, boop. Here we go. I figured it out. Let's go. And I imagine that this storyline is designed to sensitize us to what other people who aren't, you know, normal or who, what's the right way I want to say this? I'm not sure the right language, so I apologize. Is it able-bodied or like they don't have physical disabilities?
That
if you have a physical disability, sight, hearing, whatever it is, the amount of work, extra work that you have to do to navigate the world to get basic care that anybody else is getting is disproportionate, I think is the point.
Right. That's absolutely right. I'm glad that Harlow has no more headache.
Yes.
And
she seemed like a cool person too. Like I dug her, you know, once we got her talking, it was like, oh, okay. Like,
you know, and look, Santos was a jerk to Harlow. She kept walking away and she could have handled that better. But I also think that it's important to keep in mind, like, Santos is busy. She's being threatened with being held back. She's got other patients. And the fact that the hospital administration hasn't figured out a way to get her the resources she needs in an interpreter is a waste of her time. It's a waste of her time. And it makes the care worse for Harlow. And it takes Santos away from other patients. And that is not on Santos. Santos could have been a little kinder about walking out those few times. But once she finally has the interpreter, she's actually really gentle and empathetic and really was a great doctor to Harlow once she had the resources that she needed.
And I think this goes into this question of how modern healthcare delivery is done. Right. You know, we go from faxes and whiteboards to Wi-Fi phones and medical records, electronic medical records. And in this case, and like, let's contrast with Howard, who gets a nifty little speaking iPad and he's having a lot of fun with it, which is a fun little, you know, humorous moment in the whole thing. And it works flawlessly and very intuitively. And yet the VRI, like, we live on Zoom, like you and I are on a video connection. It's like, right. JFC, why can't they figure out this piece of technology?
They just can't.
It's crazy. It's crazy, the disparities between systems.
Yeah.
In the same episode, right? Or one episode or one or two episode distance, they couldn't get a video thing to work when, God, my God, we work on Zoom all the time, every day.
Our podcasting software works fine.
Yes, exactly. It's wild. It's absolutely wild. I did look a little bit into electronic medical records, but I don't really have a deep dive on it. It's such a complex area and systems. But if you think about the fact that a patient record is being updated by a terminal in the emergency department, and that radiology and the lab and maybe even surgery can all access that same information, that's an incredible amount of information that is being made available across an entire computer network.
It is incredible, but at the same time, it's not across a single computer network, right? Because what the problem that they're facing now is that basically most of the big software things now that any business is using are software as a service, SaaS.
Right.
A lot of people hear that going around, but like, it's not on your computer. You are on the internet and you are accessing a portal basically that is connected to all the other departments.
Right.
And if that goes down, it doesn't matter if I think somebody on Reddit pointed out, like, they probably didn't have to like turn off the computers. Like, they didn't need the no signal thing, but
it was made for good television.
Exactly. Like, it's a good television effect.
Yeah, exactly.
The reality is probably they would all be on and just not work.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the problem, is that everything is in the cloud now. And that's something that's really developed in the last like 10 years.
Right, right.
That is a new thing. And even like, we are currently recording through the cloud. And I, like, there are local copies recording to our computer too as a backup, but our voices are right now being recorded to the cloud. And if that cloud went down, which it has before, we've been unable to record before. Because the cloud goes down, then we got to be like, oh, do we got to do this old fashioned? Right. Do this
and
or that?
We have people literally all over the world that we're recording with in different time zones and different countries. And it's a miracle.
And we're low stakes. If we don't record, if we didn't record this podcast today, the world would go on.
What? People wouldn't be tearing their hair out and running around,
gnashing their teeth.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but the point is, like, there is a balance, right? There's got to be a balance where we keep some things local. Like, why is there no local backup on this?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's a cybersecurity reason why not.
Why can't they wall off the hospital?
Because because it's not internal, right? Because the SaaS is in California somewhere, and probably in a server farm in Nevada or something. You know,
they don't have the servers in the basement at the hospital.
Right. Yeah. Right. They used to. Probably 15 years ago, they did.
Mm-hmm.
Now they don't.
And then that was even a paper electronic hybrid, where now it's like, it's electronic with a little bit of paper.
Right.
But it's primarily electronic. Yeah. Yeah, and you see him always tapping in to be able just to update anything. So that the hospital staff were ready. Like, where did they store these whiteboards? Where did they store these little wire racks? How much has Princess worked with this system? How often do you train in paper stuff? They are so lucky as an institution that they had just enough amount of people that had very, very strong familiarity with these systems to activate this in an instant. Because how are you supposed to drill this? How are you supposed to practice not having electronic medical records? Right. I don't know, maybe Sarah, if you're listening, Sarah, our chief medical correspondent, can you maybe write in and let us know, like, do you guys train in that stuff? How do you prepare for outages, an electrical outage, a computer outage? Even just one or two terminals going out, like how are backup systems maintained and how do you train on them if you've never experienced them? Because
you hope that this doesn't happen, right?
Because when the look on like Joy's face or Ogilvy, or I mean, Ogilvy's face too, but Huckleberry and Santos, they were like, holy goodness, like, what are we going to do? We don't know a world without this.
And what do you do when, you know, eventually the Robbies are going to retire, right?
Exactly.
Like, the people who worked under this old system are going to retire. What do you do when they're gone? Because exactly. These people at least remembered what it was like before. I don't know what you do when you have a whole generation that doesn't know what MacGyver is.
Right, right. Or what a fax machine sound is. Right.
At least I knew what that was. I was on the cusp, right? I had dial-up. I had dial-up, like, and we had a fax machine,
mm-hmm.
you know, until the very early 2000s. So, like, I lived the first few years of my life knowing that sound and being like, get off the computer. We have to make a phone call.
I used to work for a travel agency, a big corporate travel agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I delivered paper airline tickets around the city. I used to drive around the city.
Mm-hmm. Or you've talked about it on Second Breakfast.
And I had a couple of friends, and we used to send each other, you know, sort of at the end of the day, like we're bored, there's nothing else going on. We would fax each other memes back before they were electronic. They were printed out like sort of cartoon things, and we would pass them around. And so we would be faxing each other all the latest memes to hang up in our office cubicles and stuff. So meme culture has been around for a minute.
How was the chain email culture back then? Forward this to 10 friends.
That was...
Or your hospital later. System will go down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. There was all those chain letter things. But those were around even in paper before, too.
It's so silly.
Yeah, that's crazy. But we didn't have any Nigerian princes trying to help us by fax. So.
Why not?
Yeah, I don't know. They didn't have faxes.
I have to confess, I started watching 90 Day Fiancé again.
Oh.
Oh, it's so good. It's so bad.
Yeah.
But it's I put it on the other night and I was like, the drama is real. Problem is I have HBO right now to watch The Pit. And I was just sitting there, I was waiting for The Pit to come on and I was browsing. Right,
what am I going to watch?
I don't know. I'm back in.
Sucked into the world.
Speaking of people making poor life choices... Not that having a 90 Day Fiancé is necessarily a poor life choice. It's just that the people they cast on that show are generally people who make poor life choices.
Right. Right.
Binge drinking culture you have in here.
CK. Jackie with a CK. Hey, Jackie. yeah, that was, I was thinking of you during this. When I watched the episode first, I was in bed. I was watching on my iPad. And whenever they had any procedures regarding Jackie with a CK's tongue, I put my hand up in front of the screen mm-hmm. so I couldn't see it because I could not handle watching any of that.
Yeah, I was like, nope. I just inherited a really nice couch and it has a really nice place to bury my head
when Joy was I just can't even describe. I'm sorry. No, we're not. You're just going to talk about that.
I just went nope, and I buried my head between the cushions in the back of the couch.
That said, binge drinking culture and blackout drinking, not a good situation for Jackie with a CK here.
Not great. And of course, it was the silliness in drinking that injured her in the first place, right? Her friend leapt up.
Did you see where the camera like panned down and then there's like blood, 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 blood? I was just like, oh my God, what is going on with this poor girl? It's interesting. I was doing a little bit of reading. I guess the alcohol consumption amongst the younger generations is plummeting.
Yeah, but they're also like, they're younger and... That's true. That's true. I know.
Parties and how many kegs that were going to be on offer at that party. Mm. Right? We were drinking heavily all through high school.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm always skeptical of this, like, this generation is killing blah, 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 because they did that with millennials.
Well, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm actually not knocking the decrease, because we know that alcohol has terrible health outcomes across the board.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Regular high amount of alcohol is not good for the human body. Smoking wasn't good for the human body, right? You know, right, like, and so people were smoking and drinking.
Right. You know? The millennials were the first dare generation.
Yes, right.
It didn't work with us for alcohol, but I think the millennials are like the only generation. They're in between the cigarette and the vape generations. And so we were the only ones tobacco mostly free.
That's good. That's good.
Americans, at least. I know Europe has a lot more smokers for some reason.
Yeah, in other parts of the world, yeah.
But, sure. Yeah, anyway, I think we were like the only tobacco-free generation.
I can say at home, we hardly drink. I mean, I might have a glass of wine on a Friday night or a cider or something like that. I do enjoy, like, when we go out, I have like my favorite drink and I get one of those, right? Just for, you know, for all kinds of reasons. I just can't drink anymore. If I have like two or three drinks, I'm smoked the next day.
It's tough. It's tough. You can't, you know, drinking over 30 is just not a great time.
No. And it's showing up in the market, right? Like they're losing billions of dollars right now.
Which doesn't help that there's tariffs on all the alcohol right now. And, you know, like, I don't know. It's also like, if you make things too expensive, the luxuries are the first thing to go.
Exactly.
And drinking is a luxury.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily a bad thing when you look at the drinking and driving and alcohol-related deaths as the drag on the healthcare system for people who have all kinds of chronic conditions. Louis, poor Louis, for God's sakes, right? Like, yeah, it is alcohol is not a good thing in high quantity. So.
And how sad was it with Digby and Louis? Because he was my friend. Yeah. I had a lot to say.
Yeah. And he gave the little bell and got his wings. That was a cute little nod.
Yeah.
Stuff. What else do we got here?
We talked about the eye stroke a little bit, you know, this informed consent thing.
Yep. They were a funny couple.
Close out of Alana's.
She was like, only 2 years.
Yeah. We had the close out of the Alana plot line, the sexual assault victim.
Yeah.
I, you know, it was a pretty quick scene, but I really did enjoy that exchange where she goes, I'm glad you were here today.
Yeah.
Dana says, me too.
Right? That hit me hard in the feels.
That was nice.
And I really, that actor was amazing. Tina, I cannot pronounce it. It's LVLEV.
Let's say Ivlev.
Okay, Ivlev. I can't. Anyway, she was amazing. Absolutely a phenomenal performance. And I really hope this is a little bit of a breakout for her. I know I'm assuming her pronouns. So I hope that they are around more and is a voice actor for Star Wars games. So
motion capture too.
Right. Okay.
Most of these games where there's like realistic characters now, they are doing like the big budget ones at least. Gotcha. They're doing full motion capture.
Got it.
So it's their likeness as the character.
Fun.
And that's also why people are saying like, this would actually be really cool to adapt live action because you already have the actors.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it matches, right? There's a harmony between the actor and their voice and the screen capture. Yeah.
Right.
The Davis family, bipolar or schizophrenia. And I really, Javadi's line, like, hope for your son's happiness. I was like, ouch. I mean, straight up, but like, wow, that was a bit of a
it's tough. Here's the thing is, I think this might be a me problem, but Javadi's chipper demeanor with everybody annoys the shit out of me and would make me feel way worse if that was the person delivering me news about my son.
All right.
You know, like, fair. I think it's a me problem. I think it's my New Yorker coming out, like, give it to me real, boss.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But just, I can't deal with the fact that she's smiling while being like, your son has schizophrenia. Like, that, it, you know what? I'm not saying that he can't live a happy life, but it is a life-changing thing. Like, that's a tough thing to hear, especially, you know, for his sake, like, he's been working so hard to pass the bar. And now all of a sudden, he might have to give up that whole thing. He's probably got student loans. That's going to change his whole life.
Right. It's a good point.
It's not happening in a vacuum, right? This is happening within the context of this man's life.
And you have to grieve for that. You have to take a minute and grieve for that closing out of that future potential that you've put so much time and effort and energy into. Right? You can't just go, oh, well, and move on.
Right.
You really do need to think about it, process it.
It's tough. And again, Javadi would really annoy me if she was giving me this news.
Fair enough. Have you ever cut limes in the sun, John?
No, but my wife and I quote this thing about limes every year. We went to a bar when we were living in Atlanta, and he and this bartender gives us he gives us a lime for the drink, and it was like the crappiest, dumb, like smallest lime. And he goes, bad ear for limes. And now every time we get limes, if it's like a juicy lime, we're like, good ear for limes.
That's fun.
Bad ear for limes. It's like a nice inside joke that I'm now That's including all our listeners in.
Margarita burn. There are things called fluorocoumarins in them, and that if they interact with UV light, it creates this like hydrogen peroxide like substance under your skin.
That's crazy. Then,
yeah, I've never heard of it. I've never experienced it. I never knew that was a thing. But the two conditions that Ogilvy and Javadi were talking about. Bullous, I'm not even going to pronounce these two different things, so just forget about it.
Yeah, I'm not doing it.
Yeah. They're both autoimmune blistering diseases, so where the autoimmune system sort of turns on itself and causes it. They're quite painful and deadly. But how cute were Ogilvy and Javadi here when they were like, hey, we have a case, like pop in their heads and they're like, you know, dynamic duo together. I thought that was cute.
Yeah, it would have been cuter if I didn't hate Ogilvy so much.
And Javadi.
I don't hate Javadi. I think she's annoying, but I would not want her to be, you know, delivering me bad. Like, I think I'd be fine with her as like a regular doctor. Like, sure. you're my general practitioner. We're gonna chat. I think we'd have a great relationship. But as for like giving me like a terrible diagnosis, no, I don't want her to give that to me.
Fair enough.
Just a demeanor thing. Bedside manner is not my preferred bedside manner.
Right. And finally, Peds showed up for Baby Jane Doe. And they're not accepting her.
Yeah, like, what is that? I understand the problem, but, like, whose baby is this?
Yeah.
Whose baby is this? Can we get them back?
Yeah, well, security was reviewing the footage. We don't know what's going on, but we have a season-long mystery here.
I feel like they're going to go into the security room and they're just going to be, like, taking a nap. Like, they're not actually reviewing this footage.
That's rough. What else do we got here? Got all that miscellany. I've got some miscellaneous stuff here. Fax machines.
We don't need to talk about fax machines. We Come do. On. Okay, we do. All right.
they scan the page progressively by shining bright light on it and then turning the scan into a bunch of tiny... or a bunch of dots, basically Morse code. And then they turn those dots into an audio frequency. And then that's the tone that you hear. It's pulsing. And then the fax machine on the other end decodes that and then reconstructs the black dots onto the page. So
humans come up with some wild stuff.
Totally wild. And fax machines have been around for a long time. Think about, remember telegraphs? I mean, none of us remember telegraphs, but we see it on the movies. Like telegrams. Like there was communication isn't all these forms of communication, you know, Substack posts. These are just modern pamphlets from the Revolutionary War period era, right? You know, we had telegrams zipping around all the time, right? Those are text messages and emails, right? It's just very interesting. Photographic memory apparently is not a real thing.
May I present my counterpoint?
Please. I mean, this is what the internet told me. Here we go. You know, I'm checking. Yes.
Alicia.
Photographic memory.
She, I believe has had, you know, in the past at least, you know, a very, very strong memory. And maybe photographic isn't the right word. You'd have to ask her what she'd call it, but.
I think you have to look at the word photographic. And I think that's what you have to extract out, that there is not, people do not recall images. Because memory is reconstructed and people have excellent memories and have innate and what's the way I want to say? There's internal training that you've done for yourself and or you may be applying external techniques to improve your memory. But there is no apparently photographic memory. But you can at me about this if you want. I will receive your emails. We'll read them on air. John, do you do a lot of forms in triplicate these days?
No. I think the last time I did one was when I got a car loan in like 2017.
Okay. You had to press down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And these two clerks, they're like, yeah, I'm writing it in felt tip pen. Like, what's up with that?
That is pretty funny.
It is funny. Last couple of little things. The clinical pharmacist who is opening the drug cabinet machine is not, it's not a cameo. It's not a stunt casting. That's not a real person. That's just a regular actor. Meghana Mooduiyam, I'm totally butchering her name, who's playing Dr. Megan Nort, who waves and says, hey, got your back. And apparently clinical pharmacists all over the internet are rising up in celebration that
I've heard this
profession is
they're so happy.
They're so happy.
I didn't realize this though. Like I saw somebody posting on Reddit about this. Like apparently a lot of the COVID discounts and things like that for healthcare workers, they would like exclude pharmacists from it because they didn't realize they were part of the response.
Clinical
just,
teams, right?
Yeah, yeah. They were just like, they just work at CVS. They're not. Yeah. So under celebrated group of medical professionals. Thank you, pharmacists, for all you do.
Thank you for having our backs. Speaking of backs, I don't know if you caught this. I posted a picture of it on our Discord. When Abbott says, I'll ride with him, with Howard in the ambo, you know, to the other hospital, as Robbie turns and walks behind him to you know, go back to the patient, he pats him on the back, on his shoulder, where his wound that Samira was
such a jerk.
And it's like, you don't tell me that he didn't know. And you see Abbott winces in the shot, and it's a blink and you'll miss it. It's hilarious,
though. Don't worry. Give Abbott an hour and a shot of whiskey, and he is going to be crouched in an ambulance with a hunting knife between his teeth.
Oh, good stuff. All right. A couple of quick medical things. A midline catheter, aka is a midline. It's just normally you put an IV in somebody's arm, and if the veins are there are blocked, maybe Sarah could write in about this, but you put in a longer one, you use a ultrasound to find the vein, and then you go in and then you go up much further into the arm, like up to the armpit.
And you gotta stop talking, man. I'm gonna pass out.
You're gonna pass out. You're getting flush. And then I keep hearing this D-dimer. It's a test, apparently, that measures protein fragments, which I guess if those protein fragments are in the blood and elevated, it's a indicator that there might be blood clots happening or something to do with blood. I'm not sure.
And that's what the man who Mohan sent home had, right?
Yeah, the D-dimer came back.
Yeah.
And a Hoyer lift. I have some family history experiencing operating Hoyer lifts. I don't want to go into other details, but they're an incredible and ingenious device for people who are that kind of level of condition. And they're really great, and they work really well. And it's amazing that you can get them. So that's the big lift that they use to lift Howard up so that he could get his weight.
Yeah, they are amazing. They almost had one for my mom just, you know, to help with getting her around, but ended up not really being necessary for a lot of reasons. But yeah, they are amazing technology.
It's interesting. I was just thinking there's so many different things, depending on the episode, like we're both of us, and I'm sure a lot of people in the listening audience too, where there's something that is in this show that's touched our lives in some way.
Yeah. I mean, because everyone gets sick, right? Everybody knows somebody who gets sick.
Right.
We all get old, if nothing else.
Yeah, there's that. That is inevitable. Inevitable. Well, John, I think that's about it. Did you have anything else?
Not for me. I'm still loving this season. This was a really emotional episode to watch. Yeah. My wife at one point in the episode said, "You don't have to watch this." And I was like, "I have to podcast about it." So I'm like tearing up and going, "I have to podcast about it."
Well, hopefully we're in a therapeutic environment for you.
I hope so. And I want the fans to know I'm pushing through for you.
Right. through the tongue lax. Right.
Through the tongue lax. Yep. And everything. Yep. I'm burying my face for some scenes. So don't expect me to visually describe any gory procedures, but
sorry, I started to get you there.
I was like, nope, we're done.
It's amazing though, man, when they were doing Howard's tube, medical technology is really incredible. Modern medical technology is pretty incredible.
You know what else is incredible, David?
What's incredible?
How much we have going on with the network. Alicia and I are recording a One Piece One shot tomorrow for season one.
Okay. Oh, for the live action.
For the live action. And season two comes out a week from tomorrow. So we'll once we have a chance to watch it all, we will record a one shot on season two. So we will have One Piece live action coverage coming up. I'm starting to record my super big Cosmere project with the Radioactive Rambling Boys week. So
you guys had a little business meeting about that the other day, right?
We did.
Hopefully got some plans laid out.
We sorted a lot out. I think we're going to start that project in June.
Okay.
So I'll probably stop talking about it for a while and then let it simmer.
Got it. Excellent. I have a mid-season conversation with Ian from the Captain's Pod and John from the Dune Minute podcast. In recent conversations with both of them, they were both like, "Oh, the pit. And I was like, okay, cool. So I'm going to get together with those two on Wednesday this week. And we're going to have like a casual conversation about like where they're at with it, just kind of as a mid-season reflection. So that'll be out a little bit later and that'll be fun. And shout out to the Captain's Pod. They're covering episode to episode coverage of Starfleet Academy, which is a really good show. Like I'm really enjoying it. And then I was just on a Dune Minute podcast with those guys. They are covering the miniseries that was on the Sci-Fi Channel back in the 2000s. And so I was on a podcast to talk about episode 2 of that miniseries. So we had a lot of fun. And we're going to be talking with them more later in the year because both Dune Prophecy and the third of the Denis Villeneuve movies will be out later this year.
That's cool. I might cover Dune Messiah with you.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see.
Cool.
I still haven't watched part 2 of the original movie, but it's fine. It's fine.
I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
Try and get the biggest screen immersive experience you can for that show.
I am just having some trouble with Timothée Chalamet.
Sure.
I get it. It's just not my headcanon, Paul.
I get it. I can totally appreciate that.
He's too recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
He's a movie star. What I mean?
Yeah.
It needed to be a nobody. All right. Enough Dune talk. We've got, I wanted to mention Radioactive Ramblings is going to be covering The Boys coming up, as well as Invincible season whatever it's on. I think like four now. And so check out their feed. They just finished up Fallout. We've got Nevermind the Music. I know I'm planning my cameo on their feed.
Do you have
we're gonna
a
be recording tease? In probably about a month. I don't know how much Mark wants me to tease, so I don't want to.
I don't want to get
ahead of myself.
Don't cross Mark.
Mark's in charge.
Yeah,
don't and cross. Nicole.
Yes.
I can't overstep the never mind
people. Trouble.
But in the meantime, you have a weekly episode from them on music and psychology, so don't sleep on it.
And we have Properly Howard Movie Review. They're about to start their new season, and it is called The Honeymoon. I keep calling it The Honeymoon. It's The Newlywed, where they had to each guess about movies that they had seen or not seen. And where is the thing? They're doing The Running Man, but the 2000s era version. Do I have the right? Oh God, I don't have the right page on the talk about something and I'll tell you.
That's all right.
Okay. Just,
you know what? If they want to know what they're covering, they should listen to The Draft.
They should. Out they should listen
on
to
the Properly Draft. Howard feed.
Yes.
They should not be getting this secondhand. They got to hear it right from the Steve and Anthony's mouth.
I like that. Oh, you know what else we got to mention is Alicia is continuing with her Oscar coverage.
Absolutely. I just saw we got a Blue Sky about it like while we were talking.
Okay.
Somebody was listening to it. So obviously the reviews are in and it's great.
How many episodes did she plan for? It's like 12 episodes.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Like really in-depth coverage on all the different aspects, everything from documentaries to sound design to international films, all kinds of stuff. She did an episode on the BAFTAs. And so she's really leaning into the cinema and award stuff. So go check those out. We have a specialty feed for that as well, Cinema Hounds. So if you're just here for the movies, you can check out that.
All right, back to the Lore Hounds.
Yes.
Did you miss my joke? I said back to the Lore Hounds.
Oh, no, that was really bad.
Back to the Lore Hounds.
Yeah, no.
Sorry. All right.
Context we've got, is missing for it.
We've got... All right, David. Annie Hall.
I'm just being... I'm doing my best Ogilvy impersonation and just being obtuse about things.
Well, then I'll be Joy and be snarky.
There you go. Perfect.
So we've got also Annie Hall coming up. TBD whether I'm on that, apparently, because of my
Do you want to be on it?
I mean, I'd love to be, but
oh, okay, good. We'll then see. We'll make sure that you're on it. All right, we'll rearrange. I was just trying to be whatever, like functional about it. So
we'll see what's going on. We'll talk off air and we'll figure it out. But well, there will be an Annie Hall podcast very soon for our February 11thies, and then we got to present my Millennial Madness list too.
We do.
Summer. I think we're doing Millennial Summer in March. March of the Millennials, something.
Is that it? I can't think of anything else right now. There's always
That's
something.
That's it. Well, I don't think we have anything else going on except to say thank you to some people.
We do. Need to do that indeed. Discord server boosters, Aaron K., Taylor the Thriller, Duve 71, Athena Agilea, Lestu, Nancy M., Ghost of Perdition, and Radioactive Richard and Audrion. They all donate their, what are they called? Bits, bytes, boops?
Boosts.
Boosts their boosts to make our community server a more functional space. And we have our lore masters, our Patreon and Supercast subscribers, who are our top tier subscribers, who we literally could not do this podcast without. So Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, SC, Peter OH, Nancy M, Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Andre B, Kwong Yu, Nathan T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally B, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Lestu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Cully S, Il Mariel, Paul K, Rocky Zim, Jessica A, Red Zippy, the TCS, Hadopamini, Catch It, LNR, Mrs. Tennant, AC Wilson, Eli W, Cassie K, Chumbaruni, Katilla, Josh Liu, Paint in PDX, Corey G, Quinch, and forever last, never least, Audrion. Thank you all so very much. John, thank you.
Thank you, David. We'll see you next hour of the shift.
Bye.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.